Well, it's my privilege this lunchtime to welcome you to this lunchtime event at St. Helens and to say a very warm welcome to you. My name is Peter Mosley and I work for an insurance company here in the city. I'm a member of the Insurance Christian Fellowship, which seeks to present the gospel of Jesus Christ to our friends and colleagues, the people we work with in the city. Just before we start, I'd like to encourage you to get something to eat and drink. There are sandwiches and fruit and cans of drink and chockies and stuff at the back over there. And please pay, if you can, by using the bowls on the tables provided. And whilst some of you nip off to do that, I'd like to say a very big thank you to St. Helens, all at St. Helens, for opening up the church to us today. And of course, a massive thank you to Pete Nicholas and Brad Thorne. Pete Nicholas is going to be interviewing Brad Thorne, and Brad Thorne's there, that small, diminutive character over there. There are some pieces of paper on the tables for you to ask questions, and we hope that there will be an opportunity at the end of the interview for people just to ask questions from the table. So if you could bear that in mind while they're talking, if you've got something that occurs to you, please scribble it down and we'll try and find a way of getting those questions to Brad. I don't know whether you guys want to come up and sit up here. I'm going to just introduce Pete Nicholas to you, and Pete will then introduce Brad Thorne to you. Pete Nicholas, he's that one. Pete Nicholas played rugby for Oxford University with three winning blues from 1999 to 2001. And a personal highlight was playing against the touring Australia side in 2001. He then worked in the city as a strategy consultant before moving to work with Christians in Sport, running a department supporting professional and elite sports players and athletes. Pete currently runs a church in central London in Old Street called Inspire, and he's married to Rebecca. And Pete is now going to introduce Brad to you. So, guys, it's over to you.
Thank you, Peter, very much. Well, look, let me just give you a bit of an idea of the running order, how we're hoping that the event will go. As Peter said, you do have some question sheets on your table, so if there are particular questions you'd like to put to Brad, then we'll have an opportunity to do that after we've interviewed him for about half an hour. Clearly, with the number of people we've got here, we'll have to be selective about the questions, but I think, Brad, you're happy to be able to stick around for a bit afterwards, and so you'll be able to ask the questions kind of one-on-one a little bit as well. So we'll be doing that. And I know that some of you will have meetings, so I'll aim to finish by 1:50 as we go through. But I require an introduction. Brad, to some extent, requires no introduction, but let me give one anyway. And not sparing his blushes, let me just give some of Brad's career statistics. 460 professional games of rugby, 21 seasons, hence your devastating good looks. I have to be careful, I've got a distance here, so I'm all right. 17 major trophies, and combined 67 international caps. We'll come to that in a moment. One Super League title for Rugby League, one Super 14 title for Rugby Union, one European Cup title, and one World Cup. Let's give Brad a round of applause.
Nice.
I'm sure I missed something out there, right? Now, can we drill into this a little bit, just as we go into, because some of these stats I thought were quite interesting, particularly the one that I found interesting was 67 international caps, but 8 of those are Rugby League for Australia, and 59 of those are Rugby Union for the All Blacks. Have I got that correct?
That's correct. I haven't heard it said that way before, but 67 sounds better than 59, so from now on I think I might actually say that.
You can run with that, yeah, as long as you give me rights, that's fine. Is it fair to say there's a bit of an identity crisis? I'm trying to be very careful here going on, but Australia and New Zealand aren't exactly known as being the best of friends, and yet you bridge this great divide.
Yeah, true. Born in New Zealand back in 1975. I know I don't look that old, but raised there till I was 9 years old, ingrained into the New Zealand culture. By 9 years old, I was loving rugby. I was playing it. I was a Kiwi kid living in the country. And then we moved to Australia. So all my teenage years in that, growing up in Australia, learned to say, "G'day, mate, how you going? What's happening?" Learned about a new game called rugby league. That's how it goes. I grew up playing league from that time on when I was in Australia, and I happened to do all right and play professionally. And I played State of Origin. Everyone knows State of Origin here? Yeah. And that made me eligible for Australia. Mm-hmm. But along that process, the Kiwi kid inside never forgot where he came from, and never the chip that they put in your head when you're a baby in New Zealand that says you want to be an All Black. Yeah, it was the red light was going, and I always had that dream of wanting to go back. So I know it's a long answer, but the last thing I'll say is the reason I got to go back was because in the early 1990s there was rumours about the game going professional. Before that, you couldn't go back, and you couldn't go from professional and league to amateur and rugby. So when the game went professional, that gave me an opportunity to have a crack.
So help us out here, because some of us who are here from Great Britain will struggle a little bit with the Antipodean accent. So do you have a Kiwi accent or do you have an Aussie accent? I mean, which is it? You've got the twang and you drop your vowels.
It's interesting. I've been smashed in the throat from my league days in the 1990s when we used to run straight. It was just about courage, about grabbing your balls and just running straight and getting smashed. That was rugby league. And we all loved it. So I've got the gravel. It's not actually whiskey, although I enjoy whiskey, but there's a bit of Kiwi Aussie. I love saying mate. But sometimes I say fabulous and, a few other Kiwi words I'm trying to think.
Choice.
Chili. I don't like chili, but actually. I like esky. I like thongs. I don't like jandals. I'd say dominant Aussie in me.
Yeah, you have to be careful with thongs because that means an entirely different thing here to what it means for you. You're talking about flip-flops. We don't think about flip-flops when you say that word, but there we go. Now, help us out. So we've Aussie Kiwi, but what about league or union? That's maybe a difficult one as well, because you did league, then you went to union, then you actually went back to league, and then you finally went back to union, and you've finished playing union. So you've had two stints in both. Which is your favourite?
Two games where I get to smash people, so I was happy either way. But that's pretty much it. But,
so are we led to believe that as long as you can smash people, you don't really mind what the format is?
I guess there is a macho part of you. Whether you hit or be hit, you know, end of the day, it's good stuff, and you enjoy the game. But like I said, grew up playing league from 11 years old onwards. Went okay at it, got picked up. By 17 in high school, I was getting paid money from the Brisbane Broncos. My dad rocked up to high school and said, "Here's your first payday." I'm like, wow. They actually going to pay me to play this game that I love playing. And by 19, first grade for the Broncos, 21, State of Origin, 22, I was playing for Australia. So that was awesome. I loved it. We won three grand finals in NRL. Did you mention that before?
No, I didn't, but it's good that you mentioned that.
So I achieved that stuff early. And at a young age, playing for my country, winning grand finals, and like I said, I had that. It was actually my father. He died when I was 19, but he, I was saying before about when the game was going professional, he said, "Maybe you could have a crack going back." And it was a dream I wanted to have a go at. I didn't want to be a 80-year-old man, hopefully, looking in the mirror saying, "What if?" I wanted to see if I could go back and achieve what I had in the league. So when I went to rugby initially, it sucked. If I'd known how hard it was going to be, I wouldn't have probably done it. I battled away there. Didn't enjoy it as much as league. I went back to league. League had changed quite a bit from when I first played it. There was the tackling. There was four men tackles and a lot of footwork and stuff. It just changed. So I didn't enjoy it quite as much. And then as I did previously, I went back to rugby to where I've finished now. And I really started to enjoy my rugby. So different times along the 21-year journey, I liked, I had equal sort of love for both games.
And that's a long time to be getting smashed for as well.
So I'm as confused as you guys actually have to say all that.
So, I mean, having played cross codes, do you mind me asking, toughest opponent that you played against?
Rugby league, it's a tough crowd here because I don't know if you know the people I played against, but there's a guy called Chief Paul Harrigan, sort of guy my size, and he was the king of smash. So he was in rugby league in the 90s. The footy's so sanitised now, you know, but back then you could get beaten up in a tackle or you could get beaten up with fists, you know, so he could do both. So you had to be really careful if you're going to pick a fight. You had to pick the right guy. My best fight I ever had was with a guy called Brett Hetherington in a trial game, and me and him threw a lot of punches, not one connected, and we both walked away happy. So yeah.
So this was the day before video referees and before the recall and everything.
I remember coming off, and it was actually Tim Mander, who's a Christian referee, and he said, "Come on, guys, get on with it." But he called us aside, but this guy came up to me. It was a country trial game. It was played in the country. And he came up and said, "I got my money's worth as soon as that fight started." And like I said, not one of us landed one, and we puffed our chests out. But that, yeah, no, it was good.
So that's toughest in league. Toughest in union?
When I say league, with Paul Harrigan, he was a tough guy, respected. A lot of little guys. Takes a lot of courage, league, to play in a lot of little guys that I haven't mentioned. But I'm just letting you know that. In rugby, a guy like, you know, Richie McCaw, he's plays by the rules, as you saw last night. But
we've known for years that he plays, you know, well over the normal line of things, but that's okay. We just haven't been able to convince the video.
I didn't know that until I went and played with Leinster, the Leinster boys. I've been in New Zealand for 7 years, and I used to stick up for Richie. If I saw anyone mess with him, then I usually mess with him, you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, why do people have a go at Richie? It just used to peeve me off, because that's probably why I used to get cranky, because he's not the sort of guy that is going to have a scrap or anything. Me and my wife talk about it. I try and behave, but sometimes, you know, a little bit of fireiness comes out, you know. But with a guy like Richie, as far as toughness is concerned, my career as a tight head lock, I'm a number four. I'm not like the main jumping lock. That's the number five. He's the glamour boy. I'm the guy that hits stuff. And when I'm playing, I play against all the best sevens around the world. You know, George Smith, Pocock, is it Rousseau from South Africa? And so I know, I can tell you as good as anyone who a good seven around the world is, because they're the guy I'm hunting for. Our first play, when I see them go over that ball, boom, you know, I want to absolutely mother them. And
most of us think that mothering's a caring term, but you're saying...
But so I know the guys that fold easy, or they stay strong, which takes massive courage, okay? It's not huge courage for me to hit guys. I'm 120 kilo, you know, that's easy for me to do. And if you look at Richie, he's been the main target for the last, 15 years. Guys like Bucky's and my good mate Bucky's and all these other guys have been whacking him, and he just keeps getting up. And you've got to dip your hat to that, you know, maybe not to tripping, but definitely to being tough. So, yeah.
Very good. And linked to that, then, most of the kind of player maybe you've played with that you most admire? I mean, it sounds like there's quite a lot of admiration for Richie McCaw, but anyone else?
Best player I played with in league, in my opinion, was Alan Langer. I don't know if you know him, but he's a guy who is about this tall, and he'd be the smallest guy I played with, and he was the best player, in my opinion. Darren Lockyer, when you say I admire guys, I'm just giving you of who I think's quality. Obviously, play with some top guys, and the forwards that I love playing with, guys like Petro Simasiva and different guys like that. But in rugby, Dan Carter, to me, was the equivalent of Darren Lockyer in league. Yeah, got to play against Laurie Daly. Yeah, there's a lot of good guys that I respect and appreciate. It's sort of, you know, I don't know what, if you guys watch much footy or whatever, or even like a, I know this country's soccer mad, but you may have your main striker, you may have a guy that sets it up, but what about the guy in the back corner who will not let anything in, works his ass off, no one sees what he does all the ugly stuff, does the tough stuff. When you're part of a team, a forward pack and stuff, you appreciate those people. They're never going to get the highlights package, you know. You know, but you will look those guys in the eye as old men, I'd imagine, and there's just that great respect you have. Yeah.
Now, we're going to come in a bit to the fact that you're a Christian, and, I mean, I don't know, certainly with popular conceptions, the idea that you enjoy smashing people, as you eloquently put it, and, you know, 120 kilograms dealing with people when they're jackling over the ball, and how that matches up with your Christian faith. But just think about that, you were confessing to me earlier on that the last couple of games you've played in, you might not have played the full period of time that you wanted to play in. Did you maybe get carded?
Yeah, I've been last two games. My last game professionally was for the Barbarians, and ironic as it was, once again, my wife having a giggle at me, but I spent my last 10 minutes of my career in the bin. So, it was fantastic, actually. It was just ironic, really. Basically, yeah, I tackled a guy, and these days you can't lift their legs, prowl rail or something. I probably had a little bit of a dust up on the ground when he didn't like it, but, you know. Yeah, so if I move on...
And the game after that?
Well, this is real bad. I played a charity game, okay? And so there's this little guy. Apparently he's a celebrity. Don't know what it takes to be a celebrity these days.
But, not a lot.
Made in Chelsea, Jamie Lang. And, he comes running across the field. And I saw him, and there's a backstory actually that I haven't told anyone actually. I'd met him 2 days earlier as part of the camp. It's for Mike Tindall's thing for military, rugby aid.
Yeah.
And he sat opposite me at lunch, and I thought, he's got bleached hair, fake brown skin. And I thought, this kid, he's sitting opposite me, that's interesting, you know. I thought maybe he would sit with the other celebrities, you know, not an old school guy like me. But, you know, we started chatting. I had Dion Dublin next to me, you know him. And is it Bolsh, the 400-metre?
Jamie Bolsh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a real good guy. And, he said, he told Jamie, Dion Dublin asked Bolsh, what do they do a 400 and, basically 10 seconds for each of the laps, each of the 100 metres. Mm-hmm. He said, what do you do for 100? And he said, I do 10.6. And then this young celebrity, Jamie, says, yeah, I do a 10.8. And I went, okay. And then he said to me, I'm going to step around you when we play. And I went, okay. I'll just let it slide. And then the thing with me, like, you don't come back twice. He came back again. He said, I'm going to step around you. And the Dion and Bolshe heard me, and I said, I've got big arms. And sure enough, like I said, he came across, and his ribs attacked my shoulder.
And then, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, so I got sent off for 10 in a charity game. But to be fair, the organisers were pumped. So, and the thing I sent Jamie...
Did they make the highlights real?
I sent Jamie a little video. His mate said he had a phone. And I said to him, even guys like me, I get whacked. You know, everyone gets whacked, but it's about getting back up. He went to hospital that night with 3 broken ribs. He spent 3... But he got back up and he played the whole game, and it was a happy ending.
Right now, everyone is being very careful about the questions that they're going to ask you in a moment, which might just be a good point. If there are questions around the table, then maybe whoever's going around and collecting them up, maybe now's a decent time to do that, and then we can feed them in. Let's come to your Christian faith, because that's a crucial part of your life, and you know, part of what makes it interesting as a story is not only your rugby successes, but also the fact that you're a Christian, how those two marry up. Do you mind just sharing a little bit about how you became a Christian, what was behind that decision?
Basically, when I was in New Zealand, we went to church as a family, up to I was 9 years old. I used to go to Sunday school, and I know it's not cool to say, but I love Sunday school. I loved hearing Bible stories and about Jesus and stuff, and it was awesome. It was a golden sort of time. Moved to Australia. Mum and Dad, we went to a couple of churches in Australia. It was a new country and all that. We didn't feel comfortable at those churches. And we just, unfortunately, Mum and Dad didn't persevere, and we just stopped going. Mm. So we ended up being maybe Christmas Day, if you're lucky, rocking up. So from 9 years old through my teenage years, stopped learning about about Jesus and the Lord, and started to, I guess, forget about him and just get on with my life. My mum and dad had some neighbours move across the road. They were Christians when I was about 15, and they asked them if they want to come along to church, and they started going back to church. It's the church I still go to this day in Brisbane, which is really cool. My brother, by the time he was late teens, he declared himself an atheist. It's a big turnaround, isn't it, you know, from 9 years when we first moved over. But a schoolmate, one of his best mates, was a Christian. He said, come along to church, you know. Fair enough, you got your views. And he actually recommitted to becoming a Christian. And then there was me. And I'm just doing my thing. Like I said, 17, signed, 19, first grade, 21 Origin, 22, playing for Australia. Signed $1 million contract when I was 22. When I was 13, I went back for my granddad's funeral, and my relations sat around after it, and they said, what do you want to do when you grow up, Brad? I was 13, I said, I want to be a professional footballer. And they all laughed, because, and just be careful when you laugh at people, but none of one in our family or anything had done anything like that before, you know what I mean? So my dream was, when I'm a professional footballer, one day I'll be rich. Everyone's going to know me. I'm going to get pats on the back. The ladies are going to notice me, because I'll tell you what, they weren't keen on me when I was younger. But, it's just going to be the best. I got to that place by like about 22, where I had all that stuff, had paid off a house in like 6 months, had a car with my name on it. Like I said, $1 million contract, going to any club I want, to the front of the line. There was a lot of opportunities with the ladies, and I took them, unfortunately. Ego was out of control. And it just got to a place where it was all about me. And there were times where I'd wake up and I'd think, where am I at? There were times when I would do stuff that I knew that Mum and Dad hadn't raised me to be like that. There was times where I remember those golden years as a kid, and I didn't feel so golden anymore. You know, so there was an emptiness, and it really confused me inside. And I felt a lack of purpose. I had all this stuff, but I just wanted more stuff. More women, more money. It was never enough. And, I just come to a place where I just went, right, you know, my behaviour was getting worse as far as being a bit disrespectful and my partying and carrying on. And I started to really think about, the Lord. Mm. So mainly because of what those precious 9 years as a kid, and probably because, like I said, my mum and dad and my brother had recommitted to their faith. So you know, I like Christians. They seem to, you know, they're nice people. Always felt good around them. Key moment came when I went on a tour to Great Britain, 1997. And I was at Wembley last night for the All Black game. But we played at Wembley in 97, the old Wembley, against Great Britain. But my front row partner was a guy called Jason Stevens. He's a Christian. And on these tours, we just cut loose, you know. We train hard, play hard, party hard. But he was he stood out, not through yabba, not through words, through actions. And it really stood out to me. He wasn't doing what everyone else was doing. So we became great mates, chatted to him. I said, look, Jace, I like Christians. They're nice people. One day when I'm one of those, you know, you see those old people and they just seem to be nice. One day when I'm one of those people, I'll be a Christian. Because right now I'm a loose cannon. You know, I'm cutting, you know, I don't want to be some hypocrite. When I change, I'll become a Christian. He said, you've got to let Jesus change you, you know. The Lord created you for a purpose. He gave his son on the cross, you know, to pay for your sin. It's a massive play. You need to acknowledge that, you know. You need to acknowledge the Lord Jesus Christ and what he's done for you. Allow the Lord to change you in your heart. Which was interesting, you know, pretty deep for me. But I took that on board and I went back to Australia and got even worse. And a couple months later, I think a lady had just left my house or something. I just went far out. There was some other stuff going on. I'm going down here. And I can't change. I want to change, but I can't. It doesn't make sense. But so I thought, I'm going to give this, what Jason said, a crack. So I said a prayer. It's quite a funny one, really. I said, Jesus, if you're there, I don't know if you're there, but I'm sorry for the stuff that I've done. I've done some really bad stuff. I've done some stuff that's not so bad. But I'm sorry for the stuff that I've done. Please forgive me, and I submit my life to you. Here's the car, here's the keys. Help me turn this life around. So from that point forward, there was no ray of sunshine or some gospel music. I just got up.
The heavens didn't open.
Got up. I went, okay, that was interesting. talking to myself in a room, but...
And did things change?
Yeah, well, I thought I'll give it a couple months because I don't want to be some guy that's like, oh, I'm a Christian now, yeah. And then next week I'm like, oh. I'll just keep it to myself. And then things started to change inside. Things started to change. A big moment happened when my teammate Shane Webke, he roomed with me for like 5 years, we're good mates, and he came up and said, some of the Broncos teammates come up to him saying, what's going on with Thorny? What's happening? You know, things are changing for him, you know. For me, when I became a Christian, I remembered that stuff from when I was a kid about Jesus, stories, but I thought, yeah, I've just talked to Jesus. I better learn about him, you know. So there's four Gospels, basically. It's a fancy word for saying four people wrote about Jesus. So, and you got different perspectives. So it's the same story, but they pick out different things about him. So I read them, when I picked up the Bible before that, it was boring. It was hard work. from that time on, I was on fire reading about Jesus and stuff that I loved, which was service, which was humility, which was work ethic, which was discipline, which was wisdom, which was courage, sacrifice, all these qualities that in society and the world, we love to talk about these things. And this package that was Jesus was those words. And that impacted on me greatly. There's a whole heap of other things. Probably one of the big things I felt that changed, just in a little way that I noticed personally, was up to that time, it was all about me. All about me. And then people were like way down there, and then I didn't even think about God. From that time on, the Lord became important each day about how I was going to live that day. I started to think about people a whole lot more, and think about how they were impacted or how I could, you know, and then a lot less about me. So it just swapped around, which was big. You know, you sit here and go, oh, yeah. That was big for me. When you put yourself number one all the time, when it's all about what you got and your status and all your stuff, when that turns around, you notice that it's interesting. And it wasn't through my own effort. Stuff was changing. So, yeah.
Brilliant. I wonder if we might now be able to pause and take a few questions as we go around. I don't know whether or not we'll be able to grab them in time, but if there's a question from the floor, as we do, just if someone's confident enough to put their hand up, then we'll take that. Let's grab a question here. Yes.
Hardest level of football you played? Origin, test, yeah. Rugby test, or rugby?
Good question.
Let me just repeat it for people at the back, if that's okay. So hardest level of football that you've ever played, origin, test, Europe?
That's a good question. And what I put on par is I put on par state of origin, which is just intense, okay? And I'd put on par Springbok test in South Africa, you know, altitude, you know, bash up. Yeah, so there's sort of like some of those high-octane games against Aussie as well, but yeah, that's the sort of, to me, that are same, yeah.
Interesting. So rugby league, rugby union together. One here as well, yes. How have your teammates responded to you being a Christian?
That's a great question. Yeah, they didn't like it at first. They would sing Kumbaya at the pub. It was embarrassing. Which was, you know, they didn't like it, and they put heat on me, you know. You know, get drunk, Christian bitch, and all this sort of stuff. Guys that I stood next to, played my heart out for. You know, it was... interesting for me. I'm a guy that likes to be part of the group, and now I've got to stand over here, you know. But that was good, because I just felt the things I learned in life was all the easy stuff. There's no real substance to it. You know, if stuff in life that's tough, there's usually a reason why it's tough, and there's usually something to be gained, you know, by going through. And I felt that the Lord was with me, and it made me... I think I could have been fluffy about my faith if no one had come at me, you know? But it made me... I had to go, right, am I in? Am I part of this team, I guess you could say, or am I out, you know? It made me make a stand, and over time they were forced to respect it, because you can yap all you want, and I could talk all I want, but actions speak powerfully. And then when your actions speak, then your words start to have some meaning. So that was interesting, yeah.
And just related to that, Brad, do you mind me asking, so how did it impact the way you play rugby? Did it change it at all? Did you just carry on regardless? Is it kind of faith separate to to the rugby pitch?
It marriages perfectly. It's such a connection. Like with rugby union, I love the game. It's a game of service. Okay, for me to do well in the line out, I need the props to lift me. For my tight end prop not to get absolutely hammered, I need to be up his backside pushing the scrum. I know that sounds a bit weird. For the halfback to get clean ball, you've got to hit the breakdown. You know, you've got to put it through your hands. You've got to work on the inside and D so no one comes through. You're doing little things. You are bringing all those things. You're humble. Because you get cocky, you're going to get knocked over. You know, you need discipline. You know, you need to show respect. You know, the word love. Us men don't like talking about love. It's a pretty big word. You got to love your mates. You got to care about them. That's the biggest fabric to me in a team. The camaraderie, that's what I love. Number one, I've always loved it. You got to love your mates. I was talked about Richie before. If they come after my mate Richie, then I was going to come after. You know, come and say hello to them.
In a Christian way.
Now, just that's probably the last. You know, I don't know how many questions you're going to get, but one thing I want to cover is, I like talking about physicality. I like talking about, I guess, aggressive stuff. This is a game of rugby. I was with a group of kids that liked contact as a kid. The other kids that didn't like it played soccer and they did other stuff. You know, my group, we like getting physical, getting in the mud, and it's a great game, and it's a sport. And, after games, me and Buckies usually shake each other's hands first because we just bash the crap out of each other. You know what I mean? And that's, I don't know if people in here have played rugby or they've played a sport where you competed hard. The guy that competes the hardest is usually the guy you want to shake hands with first. You have a respect for him. I play in the, try and play in the, game, or, you know, the rules, whatever. There are blowouts, you know. Sometimes you get feisty and boom, you know what I mean? It's not emotional. It's not the end of the world. I got a bit fired up there. Sorry, you know, let's move on with it, you know. It's the game of rugby. It's great stuff. And I don't see any issue with my faith and playing rugby. And I like to play it hard, so no apologies. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Brian. Actually, that covers a couple of the questions here, which is about how your faith makes a difference to the way you play rugby. There's a couple asking about how your teammates responded. Did you try to share your faith with them? How did that go down?
No, I just got on with my stuff. I'm not a car salesman. I'm not here like today. I don't want to get emotional with you, or touch you, or corner you. Here it is. Take it on board or don't take it on board. You're men and women. You know, we all are, and we got a life that goes quick. And my talking about this is I feel the Lord has purpose in this life, and I believe there's something pretty powerful to come. And I believe there's repercussions if our sin isn't dealt with. With my teammates, my actions often spoke in the last 17, 18 years of being a Christian. And if they want to talk to me about it, then I'm happy to talk to them. Do I want every teammate to become a Christian or get along to church? Yes, I do. But I'm not into, it's in the Lord's hands, and I'm not into forcing my stuff on anyone. We're men and women, and that's between each person in this room and God.
So, thank you. And one more question. With your career, I mean, it does stand out. You know, you played for so long. You know, thanks be to God, you didn't have, injuries that stopped your career early. You know, so anyone outside looking in would see your kind of career stats and would think that here's a guy who's, been as successful really as any in across both codes. So how does being a Christian change your view of success and what real success is?
I didn't talk about, I told you at 19 I made this team in 22, whatever. To get there, I cut and scratched and bit my way to the top. I ain't helping anyone. I was just single-minded. My dad got me training as a 16-year-old, and I was a machine. And get out of my way. If the team lost, but I played well, I was happy. I don't care, The Lord impacting in my life and bringing me around, I started, like I said, to care about others, started to care about my team, not just my own performance, and started to want to impact on guys and help them out and stuff like that. So along the way, before I became a Christian, after, I've been lucky to win a lot of stuff. What's the secret? Play for good teams, you win stuff, okay? That's the real secret, okay? But if you want to give me the love for that, that's fine. But but the thing is, you know, you talked about some of those league. I won 1997 Super League title. Do I think about that? Never, really. It fades. It's the next year. I won a World Cup in 2011. Well, the next one's here. We moved on. Life's quick. Stuff fades. Stuff that you think is so important. I'm not saying, you know, we're trying to reach our potential. We've got unlimited potential, every one of us, and we have stuff that we're good at, and we set goals and we achieve them and all that stuff. But I'm just saying, for me, my life wasn't based on that, you know. It was that I was loved by a God that I believe created me and loved me and has a purpose for me. And what that purpose is, I've submitted to that. And for me, if I look back on that, how's that look? If I look back on my career, 17 titles, blah, 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 you know, so many games, it's about the friendships, it's the mateships, it's about the tough years where we had to stand next to each other and we got beat every week for 9 rounds and we're almost out of the comp and we had to hang tough and we started, you look at yourself before you blame your mate. You know, and your character was tested. It's all that stuff, which probably is important to me. Yeah, I love winning those stuff. It's great, but I've had just as proud years when it's been tough. And to be honest, I thank the Lord for the whole package. I know that that's going to fade away, and it moves on. And I see it for what it is, and I just, like I said, I'm just doing my thing.
Brad, I want to thank you on behalf of everybody here so much for travelling here, particularly when you were busy just yesterday watching the All Blacks and doing a bit of commentary and stuff on that as well. Thanks to your wife as well for giving up time and coming here. You've been a real gent, and it's been gracious of you to share your story with us. Thank you very much. So give a round of applause. Just as we close, and I'm conscious of time, just in these last couple of minutes, perhaps you'd be kind enough, on your tables, you've got a little bit of a sheet of paper from Psalm 103 with just a few verses there. And we chose just to have this on tables because it was interesting where Brad ended just at the last. He said that all of his success, he's conscious that all of success will fade. And that is quite a perspective on success, isn't it? It's interesting that that's a perspective that King David, who was one of the most successful people throughout of the Old Testament, a king, a warrior in his day, a poet, I guess he'd be one of those guys that's good of everything and is good at everything and is nice as well, so you even feel guilty for being jealous of them. But King David wrote this about human condition and also about God. And let's just close on this. He said, "As a father shows compassion to his children, so the Lord shows compassion to those who fear him. For he knows our frame, he remembers that we are dust. As for man, his days are like grass, he flourishes like a flower of the field. The wind passes over it, and it is gone, and its place knows it no more. But the steadfast love of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting on those who fear him, and his righteousness to children's children." Two questions to ask as you read these few verses. What does it tell you about man? What does it tell you about God? And what it tells you about man is exactly what Brad has just said. It is remarkable for someone who's had a career as long as him, with so many high points and so much success, to say that that perspective, that ultimately it all fades. But that is true of the human condition. We flourish, as verse 15 says, like a flower of the field. God willing, I hope you're enjoying times of flourishing now. I hope England flourish in the World Cup and go on to win it. Sorry, Brad. But as we flourish, it's worth recognizing that performance for a moment does not equal permanence. That's the mistake we make. We think if we perform, if we flourish, we get permanence. And the paradox of the human condition is that flourishing is oh so very short. And so even when you get everything, like Brad was saying, that experience of asking, is that it? Is there more to life than this? That is the human condition. That is what it means to be human. We flourish for a moment, but it does not give us the permanence. And of course it couldn't, because God doesn't intend it to. Because God wants us to have permanence in a relationship with him. Look at how it goes on, verse 17. The steadfast love of the Lord. That is a permanent word, isn't it? Steadfast. Is from everlasting to everlasting. There's another permanent word. Something that never ends. Is with those who fear God and his righteousness. That means his right standing to children's children. That is that those who trust in God through Jesus Christ are given a permanence that never ends, are given a steadfastness that endures forever. We're not meant to find permanence in flourishing and success in this life, because that's not what life is about. Life is about a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. I know that many of you spend your days evaluating stocks and options and financial commodities and businesses and asking, will these last and will their performance continue? Well, maybe take a moment to do the reflection that David did on the human condition. Where is it that you're putting your longing for permanence? And in the final analysis, will it really last? Will it really endure? Thanks again to Brad for being so eloquent and for helping us to think that issue through. I know that he's going to stick around at the end, and if you'd like to grab him and ask him questions, then he'd be very happy to do that. Can I just say that if you're an autograph hunter for him, just hold off for 5 minutes so that people with questions can get there straight away. If you're after my autograph, come straight to the front. I'll be happy to give it to you. No one's ever asked for it, so I doubt that's going to happen. Also, as you go away, you'll see these on the table as one of the eyewitness accounts that Brad was talking about of Jesus' life, the Gospel of John. Written by the disciple John, who was one of the close friends to Jesus. And you can find out more about the life of Jesus Christ with that. It's also worth saying that St. Helens do lunchtime events, particularly, and there's that are held regularly week by week here in this building. So if you've enjoyed this, then do come along to some of those. There'll be more information on the information desk just over towards my left. If you don't have to dash away, don't feel that you need to. Do stick around and enjoy the atmosphere. But if you need to go, please feel free to leave. And thanks very much for coming. Let's give Brad a final round of applause.